As a man in recovery, how do I integrate my masculine and feminine parts?
Welcome to the Real Talk Recovery Podcast with the Therapy Brothers. We're brothers, we're therapists, and we know recovery. Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Brandon, one of our favorite topics, at least one of your favorite topics, right?
I love it. We love talking about masculinity and femininity. So it's great.
Yeah, that's
speaking
awesome.
Of masculinity, we were just talking about our men's retreat.
Yeah.
Just kind of reminiscing on it. And
oh, man, that was awesome.
I mean, it's crazy. It was so long ago. But our guest today actually went to our men's retreat.
Yeah, so we're really lucky. Yeah. He came to our men's retreat that just happened about 6 months ago. And it was funny that we were just talking about it before he came on today. So, we're excited to have James here. James, you came and got the full experience of the retreat and you still wanted to come back on the show, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
All right, James. So if you could just give us a little bit of background and a little bit of context and then ask a question.
Okay, so there's been this like feminine part of me since I can remember. You know, I can recall like when I was, I don't know, 3 or 4, one of my sisters threw a dress on me. I liked it. I ran and hid. I wanted to keep it on. And I just remember having this thought, what if God had made me a female rather than male? And that was kind of I've had some other kind of experiences that kind of reinforce that idea. And I'm trying to decide how much context I want to give you. I don't know if I want to give you my whole life story or just, I'll try to keep it to the Cliff Notes version, I guess. But sorry, this is pretty tough for me to talk about. I shared it first publicly at the Rising Suns conference, right? But so I have this desire or want to cross-dress, and there's this feminine side of me that I don't really understand. And I don't, you know, because, you know, so I've been in addiction recovery from pornography and I've been doing that for a couple of years. And, you know, like John Eldridge, you know, one of the things he says is you got to be in touch with who you are as a man and to really fight through that. And then, but then I've got this other part of me that wants to be feminine or even female. There was a time actually where I just kept it to myself, but there was a couple of years where I considered myself a lesbian trapped in a man's body, you know, and if the circumstances were, if I hadn't been married and if I, you know, and if my family wasn't particularly opinionated and fairly judgmental, I probably would have made that happen. You know, I mean, I'm glad I didn't, because as I really thought through it, I realized that that's not what I want to be. I know I'm a man. I was born in the right body, but I still have this part of me that like craves the feminine. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have one particular part of me that still identifies as female, that wants to express herself, but can't because of, you know, the circumstances of my wife, my own addiction recovery, and that kind of thing. And so what I'm,
so really James, sure. James, could you say more about that? The circumstances with your wife and your addiction recovery stop you? What do you mean?
Well, so at first it was my wife. It made her very uncomfortable. because we've, you know, it's something that I didn't start like actually cross-dressing until a couple years into our marriage. I first told her about it. It made her very uncomfortable. She was more uncomfortable to know about that than the viewing of the pornography and the masturbation. And so, you know, that's been, so she's been very uncomfortable with that. I've initially, when I gave it up, it was all for her. Then, you know, and that was a tough time. There was a lot of resentment there. And then eventually I came to understand that I also needed to give it up for me, because there was an aspect to my acting out in the pornography that involved the cross-dressing and the, you know, that side of things. And so I needed to separate myself from it for both reasons. And I'm really glad I did, just because since then I've learned a lot more about those parts, those kind of wants and desires. They're still there. They haven't gone away. I don't know if they'll ever go away. But anyway, I tend to ramble.
No, so, this is so good.
Yeah, that's good, James. So Brandon's question was like, what makes it so you can't express whatever it is about that part of you that you were talking about?
So I guess short answer is it's an agreement between my wife and I, and then it's a commitment that I've made to myself.
Why?
Because so I guess with the, so to both parts. So the first part to my wife, it's a boundary, I guess, that she has,
makes her uncomfortable. She doesn't feel safe. And so you've committed to not do that because of that with your wife,
because of that boundary.
So this, I'm really curious about the second part. Wife, you've, the commitment that you've made to yourself. Why?
Well, it's, I, part of, I kind of realized or was counseled. I can't remember exactly how the thoughts came into my mind, whether it was, you know, my own or my therapist or whatever, but what I realized is that I needed to be able to sit in pain, that I needed to be able to, you know, if I'm having anxiety or I really feel like I need to act out rather than, you know, dressing up. And 'cause that was one of the reasons for that was, it was like a comfort blanket. It helped me to just kind of, shed that anxiety and just kind of, and so the commitment to myself is that I don't want to numb out, you know, in any form, or at least I'm trying not to. But you know, there are other parts of me that want to cross-dress that I don't feel like are addictive related, but I feel like there are other parts that are addictive related. And so that's another aspect of it that I was going to ask you about that kind of adds another layer of confusion to the situation.
Actually, I think you're headed in a pretty good direction already, James. That's what you just said, in the sense that there's something about the behavior itself that has a numbing effect that you would say, and I'm putting a little bit of words in your mouth, so tell me if I'm wrong, but that you would say isn't necessarily effective for your overall goals and who you want to be and for your life. And the emotions that drive the desire to do it aren't necessarily bad either. There's multiple feelings inside of that. And so if you're choosing not to engage in a certain behavior for the numbing aspect, for the addictive aspect, for whatever it is. And I imagine that in the past, it's all been lumped together. And so there hasn't been the ability to see those other parts of you that still have the desire, still have the want or the urge to do those things. And part of the work is to be able to unravel some of those and say, okay, what is it? Could I meet those parts of myself with some actual compassion, even if I'm not actually going to act on them the way that I've acted on them in the past?
Right.
Question for you. So do you think that this desire comes from, like, it's a consequence of life experiences? So of like trauma and feeling shame, and you're acting out in some way because of those things and those feelings? Or do you feel like it's just at the core of who you are? And so it's not about life experiences. It's just the way that you were. I know this is a big question, the way that you were born and who you are, and it's trying to come out and be so that you can be authentic. And you know, what do you think?
I think both, actually, because so I started to identify these parts of me, and there were four of them that presented themselves to me. And I say it that way on purpose because I feel like I didn't even their names, it just kind of popped into my head. And then they all took their form, and it just aligned so perfectly with what I had experienced my whole life. I have no reason not to believe that's true. Right. Anyway. So
James, just a caveat, the way James is talking comes from, it's called internal family systems, and he's done parts work in therapy. So he's not like schizophrenic, and he's, well, you know,
some people might argue that, but
right. But like that, it's these parts that you're talking about comes from a real reflection and curiosity as to who you are and what's going on inside of you. So this is therapy speak, just so the audience knows.
Okay. Thank you. And cause the only therapy I've ever done is IFS, is so that's all I know. But, anyway, so as I was getting to know these parts, there were three of them that I have associated with distinct memories from my childhood. But then there was one, and they manifested themselves in reverse order of creation. So the first one that manifests itself, I remember, you know, I associate with a memory when I was like 11 or 12 or 13, you know, right in there. And then the next one, I was like 4 or 5. And then the next one, I was like 3. And then the last one that manifests itself to me, I have no memory of. And I've had the thought that fourth part it's before I can remember. And so I'm wondering if that part is part of like my core, if that was a part that I was born with, or if that was a part that was, you know, developed because of something that happened when I was very, very young that I just don't remember. You know what I mean? So that was part of my question too. Well, is
the question is why does it matter? Cause I think it does matter, but okay. Why does it matter whether it was developed or just a part of your core?
Well, for me, the parts, from what I understand, the parts are created because of traumatic events, you know, whether it's big T or little T, it's, you know, things that happen in your life, and the parts kind of are created in response to things that happen in life versus something that you're born with. It's there from the beginning. It's not created. And so the parts, you know, they can be healed and can be given different jobs maybe versus the core doesn't change. That's my guess.
Well, yeah. The question is like, do we need to fix some maladaptive behavior that are causing you problems, or do we need to support you in being more authentic and owning who you are? Right. And those things actually are the opposite in many ways. And so it's important to really like look at this and figure this out so that you can know which direction to go in. And yeah. it sounds like, and this isn't her fault, but it sounds like from your wife's point of view, it's like, oh my gosh, this has to be fixed. Like this is a problem. And of course it's triggering all kinds of stuff inside of her. Right. Mm-hmm. Tyler, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Brandon, I don't think this is one of those either ors. This is likely a both and that's where I think we're trying to get to is could you work to a place where inside yourself and also inside your relationship, you understood what was maladaptive in terms of behaviors, in terms of your overall goals and what's effective, and embraced the parts of yourself that are pushing whatever those behaviors might have been in the past? And can there be room inside your relationship for you to be able to have to speak those parts without necessarily needing to act on them if they're maladaptive and they're not healthy, right? But there needs to at least be room there to embrace those things and to be compassionate, understanding, and validating to those parts. And in fact, I would say that many times when we invalidate those parts of ourselves, that's where they find a sideways way out of expression. And so oftentimes you'll see like some type of a compulsive behavior that happens, or, you know, some type of traumatic thing happens in our past. Yeah. I remember this stupid story, but I remember as a freshman in high school getting a brand new pair of shoes when I joined the cross country team. And on the very first day of practice, one of the seniors came up to me and said, "Nobody runs in clean brand new shoes." And he scuffed up all my shoes. And as a freshman in high school, I was like, what just happened? I felt like violated. I felt like picked on. I felt like, you know, when I got to be a senior, there's a freshman on the team with brand new shoes. And what did I do? I walked over and scuffed up his shoes.
You did?
Yeah.
I would have kicked your ass had I known that.
No. I want to, that's something I'm ashamed of, right? Like, it was almost like a compulsive thing. I couldn't stop myself from doing it, right? Now, what was the part of me that was driving that behavior when I went and did that very thing that I hated 4 years earlier? I had never actually taken time to look at that part of myself that had felt small and used and picked on. And as a result, it had never been validated. And it came out in a behavior that I regret. Right. And part of the answer, if I want to actually get better, is I need to go back to not just to the kid who did the bad behavior. I need to go back to the kid who experienced the bad behavior and validate everything that he was feeling when he went through those things. Right.
I think you need to buy him a new pair of shoes.
And too. I probably need to look him up and get him a new pair of shoes. Right.
So James, Tyler said something really profound that I want to make sure that you're grasping. And he talked about, you know, basically whether this was behavior that was just kind of learned or whether it's core to who you are. The first thing we need to start with is compassion and understanding and validation of those parts inside of you. They're there, they're real, and they're even, it's okay that they're there. Right. So before we jump to rejection, because that's kind of the knee jerk reaction to something that doesn't fit within our society, that doesn't fit within church, that doesn't fit with, it's like, let's reject this. And Tyler said, when you instantly reject, it actually gives more power to it because now it goes underground and you have less power to choose what you want to do with these parts of you because you're not practicing compassion and acceptance of them. Cause now you're just hiding them and they actually flare up now. Right.
Right.
I just want to make sure you understand that what Tyler said there, because it's so important.
No, I do. And I've done a lot of work, and actually a lot of this I did at Rising Suns, you know, where I was able to really, that was one of the things I was really grateful. I'll put a plug in for you guys. But that was one of the things I was really grateful for that conference was, I was able to, you guys had created such a conducive atmosphere to self-reflection and healing. I was able to do a lot of that work there. That's where it kind of started. And it's been a slow process where I've slowly been able to accept those parts of myself. And really, just the fact that I'm talking to you now is kind of proof that I'm at least a little bit there, because that was the biggest source of shame in my life. And now now it's still a little embarrassing. You know, I don't like to broadcast it or talk about it, but now instead of like feeling like I'm less than a man, now I can, you know, I can talk to people and be like, yeah, I'm a guy who I like to dress up every now and then, you know, what's the big deal kind of thing. But it, but at the same time, I'm not 100% there, you know, to acceptance. And I don't know if part of that's because it's a bit of a taboo topic in my marriage. Like it's a part of me that my wife's becoming more and more okay with like having the conversation, but nothing like real detail, like nothing really in depth. And so there's still that part at home where it's like, it's not really acceptable. And so I'm sure that there's parts of me that are still like, you know, we still need to kind of bury that a little, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of in that, I'm still working on it, but I'm
right.
James, another question for you with what you were saying right there. This is kind of one of the benefits of being curious and compassionate with those parts of yourself, is that it might yield some insight. And I know you've probably been doing some of this work already. When you take a look at that, let's just say, you know, I'm a man. Here I am, a man who still has this kind of desire or urge or want to dress up as a woman sometimes. You're not currently doing the dressing up, but if you were to meet yourself with that curiosity and that compassion, you might find some things inside of that that would actually give you some course of action. So for instance, like, what is it? What does it do for you when you've, you know, dressed up that way, or what does it provide for you? What needs, principles, what itch does it scratch? If you were to take the sexual part out of it.
So it's, there's a few things. One, there's the comfort aspect of it, which is separate from the sexual aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But then there's the, I don't know, it's fun. The idea of that, it's like, that seems like an enjoyable thing. There's,
enjoyable, like creative, or enjoyable, like adrenaline, or what do you mean by fun?
There's that. There's definitely the adrenaline part of it. I haven't thought about a creative part of it. So let's just leave it at the adrenaline part of it.
Okay.
And there's, I feel like there's a connection part of it too, you know,
explain that a little further. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't have a real clear picture on this one, how this fits in, but I feel like there's some aspect of whether it's connection to people in general, connection to myself. You know, I think that's actually, as I'm saying that right now, I feel like that's a big part of it, is just being able to connect with myself. But also just connecting with like the, my spiritual side, with my wife, with, you know, my kids. I don't know. That might've been confusing what I just said.
Well, let me ask you this kind of a direct question that goes along with what you're saying. Is cross-dressing a sin?
No, I don't think so. I don't feel like it is.
You don't feel like it's a sin? Here's another follow-up question for that. Should a man be feminine?
Well,
you know, these are trick questions, but go ahead with it.
Right.
Should a man be feminine?
First of all, you're not supposed to say the should word. I love that.
Good job,
that's
James.
That's a swear word in recovery. but as far as like, so is it appropriate for a man to be feminine? I think, yeah, in certain aspects of it. Like I watched a video about, there was a therapist who was describing masculinity and used Aragorn from Lord of the Rings as an example of how like Aragorn is a man's man, but he exhibits a lot of feminine behavior. You know, he's crying over his fallen comrade. He kisses him on the forehead. He There's a lot of things there that he has lots of compassion for his, you know, which some would say are feminine traits. And so as far as that aspect of femininity, yeah, I think it is appropriate for a man to have feminine traits. I don't know if it's appropriate for a man to be dressed up like a woman. I don't know if that takes away from him being a man.
So where's the line?
That's what I'm asking you guys.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Here's the thing. I think we turn to kind of what society tells us that the line is, right? And I want to come back to James and ask James, in your integrity, where's the line? Pushing out all of the what you should be and how, where, you know, how masculine, how feminine you should be, whether it's a sin, what, even what your wife says. I want to ask you, where's your line in terms of what's okay to show with your feminine self?
I mean, I don't know if this is something that I really believe is okay or if I want it to be okay, but I feel like, you know, being true to myself is something that's very important. I would like to, you know, engage in that type, in that behavior periodically, you know, not, I don't want it all the time because that's not who I am. So
I hear you wrestling with that.
Yeah.
Right. Where's the line? You know, I work a lot with Tyler. Everybody is different. We're all not 50% masculine and feminine. Men aren't 100% masculine. We're all different with our own internal polarity with masculinity and femininity. Masculinity and femininity are very different. And it's beautiful that us as individuals are our authentic selves with that. Right. So Tyler's touchy feely. He cries. He loves a good cry. Like we do these retreats and it's like the waterworks constantly.
Oh, I love it. It's like purging. It's wonderful.
And it's interesting because you look at that feminine side of Tyler and in his work and working with him, it's a beautiful thing. And society says it can be judged, right? Like, oh, what a weak man, like this or that. But overall it says that's okay. Like he's a man that cries and, you know, he's helping people. But you know, if Tyler were to put a skirt on, now it's a different conversation because now it's judged and there's a lot of stuff going on around that. Right. And you know, what I would say to him, to you, to me is, I think the most important thing is not forcing ourselves to be good according to what we're told that we should be. The most important thing is to get to know ourselves and to really trust ourselves and to be transparent and authentic. And James, for you to come on our podcast and for you to at the retreat talk about how you've struggled with cross-dressing, you are very much battling for to be a man in your integrity. A lot of guys would fight that their whole life and just feel a ton of shame and not talk openly about it and not work on it and look at it closely and hide it from their wives and all these things. You're saying, I got this part of me and it's there and it's real. And I'm not going to go through life hurting my relationships and myself trying to navigate this by living inauthentically. Right. So I really admire you, James, but I see the wrestle that you're in right now, trying to sort this out and really get down to like, what is my integrity? Who am I really? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what we can agree on with a couple of principles here, and then Brandon, I'm going to throw in a little bit more, maybe something on the other side of this a little bit too, is we can agree that whatever it is we're looking at here, if we could remove the shame and self-judgment from it, we'd be starting in the right spot.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's well put.
And if we could figure out how to remove that, then we'd be left with this ability to be curious And the curiosity would then lead us to the part that I want to talk about to add on the other side, which is effectiveness. So I have certain things about myself that I could call authentic, you know, and just a little story, you know, when we were kids, Brandon's going to bring this up about me. It's like, I've always been one who's been a little bit more in touch with my softer side. And I remember going school shopping one year, this is way back when, and we were looking at shirts and stuff, and someone held up a shirt and it was pink and it had like these little stripes on it and stuff. And someone said, "Hey, what do you think about this one?" And one of my cousins or something said, "Oh, that one looks kind of gay. That looks like something Tyler would wear." Right? That's kind of the reputation. Like, it was like, okay, like Tyler would wear something like that, you know? But where I'm going at now is like, there's parts of me that I could say would be authentic parts of me. Let's say desires for me want to do certain things. And I still choose not to do those things, not because they're bad or they're a sin or they make me unworthy of love, but because they wouldn't be effective for my overall goals. Okay. Right. So that's the question we then have to ask on the other side of this is this part of me that wants to do these things? And this is where you're wrestling, James, is it something that I just want to do and I'm just going to be authentic and go do that, and I'm just going to embrace who I am? Or am I going to look at the situation and go, I can know this about myself. I can love myself. I can understand the principles that are driving that. And I can still maybe choose not to do that because it's not effective for my overall goals in terms of connection with other people, in terms of like, I'm not going to be a very effective therapist for most of my clients. Like with what Brandon's saying, if I showed up, if I rolled into work today wearing a dress,
right.
Like that, I'm not going to be effective because that's going to be a distraction away from what I'm needing to do for my clients because of the way that things are set up in our society right now.
Right.
That wouldn't make me a bad person. It doesn't mean that I have to discount the drives that are there or whatever, but it also means that I'm going to choose to do that because I want to be effective, because my overall goals happen to be that I want to be more in line with helping my clients or connecting with people or, you know, those kinds of things. And there has to be a balance, Tyler, of those things.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you, but I think also if you're always hiding, then you're saying, I I'm just doing that because that's what takes, you know, that's what I need to do to be effective. And you're isolated and alone with some of these things, then they'll have a lot of power in there. So it's really helpful to have an outlet, to have a person that you know is going to love you no matter what in every part of you. And you can talk openly with them about it. And this is what becomes tricky in a marriage, because your wife has a lot at stake, James. So it'd be really nice for you to go to her and say, "Hey, I just want to talk openly about why I desire to cross dress." But then she's triggered.
It's like, whoa, right. Scary, danger.
And yeah. So she's not the safest person for you to talk openly about that, because for good reason, it's threatening to her and it's scary for her. Right.
Right.
She could get herself to a place of safety to say, "Hey, talk openly with me about that." As long as she has trust with you, if there's trust in that relationship, then you can have those more intimate, deeper conversations about those things. If there's a breakdown in that trust, then she's going to be triggered and that's going to be really scary for her.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But what you're saying, Brandon, is that hiding, all out hiding is not helpful because it fuels shame and it fuels all those things. So you need a place in your life where you don't have to hide, even if you choose to temper certain things.
Yeah. It comes back to shame. Like shame actually is an emotion that's important for us. It's a good emotion. I know that goes against everything we talk about, but it's a good emotion for some reasons. And if we use it consciously, then we're fine. So Tyler, if you say, "I'm going to choose to show up this way at work because I have an objective here." And so there's this part of me that I know would freak all my clients out or this or that. I'm going to shelf that. I'm going to talk to Brandon about that or my wife or whatever. And I'm going to go do my work here. That's okay, because you're consciously aware of why you're doing what you're doing.
Okay.
But if you're...
I'm still validating my parts.
it's still
there. Even if I'm not acting on them.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But if you're in pure secrecy, now the shame's going to run wild. Right? Does that, James, is this making sense?
Yeah, I think so. part of it sounds like you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, that part of it sounds like I just need to be able to not necessarily express that stuff, like physically, I don't need to have an outlet to go dress up necessarily, but I need to have an outlet to just talk about me.
Yeah. Yeah. Who you are and explore that. And which it sounds like you've done some of that in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is a really tough one too, though, because like, and maybe this is a bad connection, but like, I would not feel comfortable talking with anybody about like what my wife and I do in the bedroom. Like it's very private and personal. Like I can talk about us having sex, but I'm not going to talk about what positions we're doing and this and that.
Right.
I wouldn't do that with anybody. And so part of this feels like that level of personal where I don't feel comfortable talking about it with really anybody other than like no more than what we're talking about now.
Right.
You know, and so is like the level of our conversation. Do you feel like that would be good enough for me as an outlet to just, cause I've got a couple of friends. I've got my Lyft group that I'm a part of, my Rising Suns group that I'm a part of. Like I can express that every now and then. It's still hard, but I can, you know, I know that it's a judgment-free zone that I can mm-hmm. express that with, but I really don't feel comfortable going to any kind of detail at all.
James, I think there's a difference between outing yourself, like, hey, there's this part about me and I outed myself and it feels good because now I'm being a bit more authentic, and actually kind of processing it and trying to figure it out and like diving deep with it. And I think a really good therapist or a really good friend could help you kind of do that. And I think it could be good for you rather than this just like, hey, I have this about me and I want to say that to get it out of the way do you see what I'm saying? Like just some support to say, hey, this is who I really am. And,
this is tricky, Brandon, because like James, what you're saying is that you have a value about certain things that are private and that doesn't feel like it's shame based, but it just feels like everyone should have some privacy. And, and the challenge is that at least this is what I believe. And I don't want Brandon, you can chime in on what you think, is that a lot of times it's in the details where a lot of our shame lies. And so we need to have a cultivated space in our lives where the details that get shared, if they get shared to the wrong place, they fuel shame badly. Like boom, they blow up. It's like, whoa, more judgment. But the details shared in a safe place, they become part of the antidote to the shame itself. Yeah. And they become a space where the learning happens, where I go, like, so for instance, I do something in my group sometimes, an assignment where guys have to like map out their fantasy in great detail. And then they bring it to group and they share it. And it gets busted wide open in terms of like, wow, this detail seems pertinent. Like, and they go, why? Like, oh, wow. Like it's not even sexual now. It's like, wow, there's learning that can be happened here. Like there was something significant about the detail that because I haven't spoken it and because I haven't gotten feedback on it, I never got to see it. And so I do need to find safe places, even if it's one or two people that can hold the space for me to get curious with those details. otherwise I'm missing out on a lot of opportunity for learning.
Yeah. A transparent, authentic person is not a person void of boundaries. And so if I had someone walk in my office right now and say, hey, tell me everything about your sex life, me saying, no, I don't want to, that's actually the authentic thing to say.
that's healthy boundaries.
That doesn't work for me. But here's the thing, James. So we're not saying go broadcast this, you know, to your deepest parts of this to everybody.
Even though you're on the show right now.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting about that.
but like maybe it's you start with God. like go to God and just say, hey, I want to like talk to you about this. And I'm not going to talk to you about how I reject it and how I'm a good boy because I don't do this. And I'm going to talk to you about it. Like, I'm going to go there with you, God. Like, let's talk. Let's like work this out. And so maybe you just within that relationship, you start. And then maybe you have a therapist or maybe you have one friend that you can talk to. And then maybe your wife is continuing to trust you more and more and she becomes safer for you to talk about this with. But yeah, you don't have to like, hey, everybody, I'm going to tell you my deepest, darkest secrets. That's actually not healthy. So,
okay.
But you got to own it. You got to be able to say, this is me. This is part of who I am.
Yeah, I agree.
It will be a stretch too, as you reach out to not only to God. I mean, that talk about a vulnerable conversation when you've been laced with judgment your whole life around this, but then stretching yourself into a couple of places where you can have real connection with somebody else that can hold that space for you. That'll be a risk. That'll be a process. That'll be painful. But I also think it could be extremely valuable for you. It would be awesome as it gets further down the road, that would also be a place where you and your wife could actually have some level of safe space to talk about certain aspects of it too. It could actually be very connecting for you guys if there was at least enough safety to know that there would be empathy and curiosity on both sides of it.
Yeah.
And the question is can your arousal template and masculinity, femininity, and sexuality fit within what you guys as a couple define as fidelity and trust, right? And so for you guys to navigate that together and talk openly about that can be like Tyler just said, like deeply connecting. As long as if there's been lies and deceit and these things, then those conversations are really hard to have.
It takes a long time to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So James, we're running out of time, but I just want to just applaud you for coming on and practicing vulnerability. You know, not only are you an example of just talking about hard things, but coming on here, showing your face, talking about something so vulnerable. I hope that it motivates someone else to say, I'm going to be willing to be vulnerable because it could help some people. So I really do appreciate you a lot. So thank you so much.
You're the man, James. It really just made my day to see your face today and brought back a whole bunch of really good memories. I admire you for the work you're doing, for the wrestle that you're giving yourself to, like.